Welcome to the Transformational Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Hannah Anam. My mission is to help you lead more effectively and be an agent of positive change in times of disruption. On this podcast, we interview practitioners and leadership experts and have coaching exercises that you can apply immediately to your work challenges. Together, we learn how to achieve success and create workplaces in a world that work better for all. It's my pleasure today to introduce everyone in my listening audience to Atul Khosla. Atul is the Senior Vice President and Global Head of Talent, Learning, and Organization Effectiveness at Mondelez International. So Atul is an international HR leader, and he's got experience spanning more than 25 years and three continents. He's been primarily focused on driving large-scale transformation, strategic organizational development, and talent management initiatives across his career. Atul's passion is to bring humanity in leadership. And I can't tell you how excited I am to welcome you to this podcast, Atul.
It's my pleasure, Hannah. It's so wonderful to connect with you after a long time.
That's right. That's right. So just for full disclosure, we met about 15 years ago, and you were a global CHRO for Ciba Vision, which was a division of Novartis at the time. And I was the chief marketing officer. And I have such fond memories of sitting in your office and working together, or you sitting in my office at times, and just going deep dive into conversations about talent. And I remember I always really appreciated your strategic, thoughtful, and very human advice to me. And so I'm excited that you're here today. So give our listening audience a quick snapshot of your career journey and just what inspires you about being in HR?
Absolutely, my pleasure. And then maybe a quick comment on that, Hannah, when we work together. So I know it's been a while. We have been out of touch. Basically, I moved on, we moved to Asia, then I came back. But I somehow always felt you were around somewhere. So I always felt connected. And it's nice that we are back in touch when I'm back here in the US. So very nice being here today with you. So a little bit of my journey in what I've done and what I continue to do. You know, I grew up in India. My early part of the career was in India with PepsiCo predominantly. And then around 20 years back, I moved out of India. And with Novartis, I worked in Asia, then in Europe in a couple of regional roles. And then you and I worked here together for Ciba Vision, which was a very interesting, personally transforming experience for me. And then I moved back to Asia in 2012. And that's the time when Kraft at that time approached me for a regional role. And by the time I joined, it had become Mondelez because they had hived off the snacking business and created this global snacking company. So last 8 years with Mondelez, this is my third role. I started as a head of HR for Asia Pacific region. And then we merged Middle East Africa into Asia Pac, and I did that role for a while. And around 2.5 years back, I moved into my current role where I lead talent, learning, and organization effectiveness for Mondelez. Now, the other part of your question in terms of, well, what does it feel like to be in HR and what are my kind of takeaways from this profession which I've been part of? I love the role I do. I love the part of the business I support because I do feel that being in HR, the whole piece of basically enabling people to be successful in what they do and linking that to the business outcomes and business strategy is what excites me because I do believe, especially pandemic is a great example, that when you are faced with tough, difficult situations, talent and leadership is the only differentiator between those organizations which do well and those organizations which struggle. And if you play a role in shaping that strategy, shaping that agenda and helping people, there's nothing better to do in the organization. So I feel personally connected with the work I do and I enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. So powerful what you just said right now, Atul, is particularly in times of disruption, what can make and actually does make or break an organization is the people inside of the organization. And so what are the challenges of managing people during these times? It used to be, somebody said in 2008, it was the CFOs, right, that were helping get people out of the financial and economic crisis. Yeah. And this is a crisis of humanity in some ways, exactly. What we're dealing with right now, not just health, people's personal health and safety with COVID, it's economic and employment kinds of things. It's how do we respond? It's also fundamental in terms of core purpose of an organization, in terms of how well we pivot and become part of the solution. So I think this is a time for CHROs and it's a time for heads of HR, right?
Exactly.
Really step in and save the day. So tell me about that. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing?
Well, it's a great question, by the way. And I've been spending collectively with my team and a lot of time for the last probably 4 or 5 months on how do you really help and support our people, but also channelize the power of your organization to support both business as well as our broader community, which actually goes beyond employees. Your shareholders or people who work with you or your suppliers or communities you work in.
Would you please give our listening audience a sense of who Mondelez is, what's the size and scope of the company, and kind of globally, where do you stand in the ecosystem?
Absolutely. Thanks for calling that out, Hina. So Mondelez International is a global snacking powerhouse. So we are a number one chocolate company in the world with brands like Cadbury, Toblerone, Milka. We are number one biscuit company in the world with brands like Oreo, Velveeta, Ritz, etc. And then we are in gum and candies. So we have brands like Trident, Dentine. We have powdered beverages like Bonvita, like Tang. And then we are also present in the meals category with brands like Philadelphia cheese, etc.
Wow. So some big brands that I guess we haven't heard of the company name as much as we've heard of all of these, enjoyed all of these brands. And what's the size of the business and number of employees?
So we have around $27 billion in revenues, and we have 72,000 people worldwide.
Wow.
So, and almost 3/4 of our business is outside the U.S. So it's a very international portfolio of brands. A slightly different aspect of Mondelez is that we are a collection of different organizations which came together in last 12 to 13 years. So there is a part of Nabisco, there's a part of Cadbury, there's a part of Jacob Swisher, there's a part of Warner Lambert or Danone's biscuits business. So it's a melting pot of multiple cultures which came together over the last few years to make who we are today.
Yeah, and that in itself has got to be a challenge, right?
Yes. Well, it's a challenge as an opportunity because I think you and I, Hina, I know our times. We've gone through multiple mergers and acquisitions in our previous lives. And I think one of the biggest challenges of these situations have been how do you bring people from different backgrounds, different cultures together? And organizations typically struggle with that because you expect one part of the arrangement to fit into the other part of the arrangement. Whereas what struck me, by the way, I'm another one who came from outside into this melting pot, you know, who was not part of any of the legacy organizations. One of the biggest takeaways for me now after spending 8 years in this organization is that our culture embraces you with your diversity and what you bring on the table. So what you see here is when you walk into my office, there are people from Cadbury, there are people from General Mills, there are people from Nabisco. It's very difficult to differentiate who brings what kind of legacy. They are all now part of this organization. So you are embraced and welcomed with your differences and your uniqueness to be part of this organization, which I feel very, very proud of the way this culture is set up. Coming back to your question, so what is really happening and how organizations are dealing with that? And then I would, of course, address what are we doing to support our people through this change?
Yeah.
So first, there's a broader shift which is happening in the ecosystem of how people operate, how people engage, how people work in the organizations. And a lot of external insights which we lean on, we work with to understand what are the shifts or changes which are happening. So I'll give you a couple of examples and then I'll build on that. You know, one, the way people approached or looked at their careers or jobs is changing dramatically in the last 5 to 6 months. There's a company called Universum, which does a lot of work around employment branding. We partnered with them, and I was in conversation actually last week with them. And they work with entry-level millennials, people who are passing out of the MBA institutes and work, and you know, looking for their careers. So 20,000 people interviewed, top five drivers of what kind of organization you want to join or what are your drivers of joining a job. Number one came in as job security. Imagine 6 months back, and we do it regularly, by the way, this was not driven by the circumstances. People would ask for international careers, new experiences, development, growth opportunities, flexibility. They don't appear in the top five. So it's your job security. It's mental and physical well-being.
Yeah.
It's flexibility. Mm. It's rewards. So very traditional areas of how what makes you get up and go out of your comfort zone, work somewhere. So there are these very subtle shifts happening. And I think organizations need to take cognizance of that in terms of what are people looking for. People are looking for stability. They are looking for well-being. They are looking for psychological support.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's so interesting that you say that. Everybody's moving a little bit lower down Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And things get disruptive. I think you get your basic needs met first. And what you're saying is that's exactly what people are looking for, that sense of safety, stability, physical and emotional and mental well-being. Yeah,
absolutely. And then the leaders who are able to inspire people with getting out there, connecting with them, helping them to go through this situation in a positive way, are able to make a difference by delivering the outcomes and showing results. And I can almost, Hina, correlate where we have leaders in the organization. We operate in 160 countries worldwide, where we have leaders who show up with humanity every day, who are able to support and help people through. They are able to engage and inspire the broader organization to deliver the outcomes for them as well as for the business. Leaders who relied very heavily on top-down directing, analyzing, creating the right kind of strategies around our businesses, our categories, etc., are struggling because people want that stability. They want that anchoring. They want that leadership, which can hold their hands and help them through this transition.
Mm.
So the challenge for us is now coming to the people, how do we continue to support people in the short term? So we are doing, I mean, my entire learning infrastructure, I've got 70 people in the learning infrastructure. We have redirected their resources and focus to provide people personal resourcefulness, bite-sized tools, mindfulness support, in enabling and ensuring that they have simple, easy to implement toolkits, how to work from home,
yeah,
because they're working from a remote situation, without losing line of sight for what is important in the long term. So the bigger challenge for us is how do we balance that we are there when our people need us to go through this phase without losing sight of what is important to build the right capabilities, right leadership, right talent pipeline, right competencies to help them be part of our leadership going forward. So mm-hmm. That's what we are managing today.
Yeah. And I heard you talk about talent pipeline. And one of the things, as you're aware, I chair the board of a publicly traded company's board people committee. Mm-hmm. And though this is often known as the board comp committee. And one of the things that we're thinking about as part of our succession planning, as part of our talent planning, is do we need to slightly refine who we think of as and how we think of potential in people. There is so much I mean, this decade is going to be a decade of disruption. And even when we find a solution to COVID, we have climate risks that are very apparent, right? And there are other kinds of disruptions, including digital disruptions that are happening. AI, future of work is quite uncertain. And so how do we, to your point, grow and develop leaders to be able to hold people's hands through the journey, to be able to help people be resilient, to take care of people genuinely from a place of authenticity, at the same time as learning how to be agile to what is coming? And so I'm really curious about what are those conversations that are happening for you guys? And are you thinking about rethinking and refining your, what constitutes leadership potential?
So I think you're hitting a very sensitive point for the organizations. I think, again, looking at HINA, both the organization I work for, but also in the broader kind of ecosystem of the corporate world, across the globe, by the way, not only in the US, entire people processes were designed or created to support short-term success. And it's a big statement I'm making, but I have a point of view on that. You know, you look at your reward systems, your incentives, your promotions, your potential assessment, which you're touching upon, is all focused on delivering short-term outcomes.
Mostly financial, right?
Mostly financial, exactly. Your stocks, your MIPs or short-term rewards or your compensation. So what happened is when you are measuring and rewarding short-term performance and you're hiring smart people, they very quickly, basically, they pivot towards what will it take for me to be successful in this time frame? So what's now happening is organizations are realizing that that's not working. So people who are so focused on delivering short-term outcomes, they're looking for their next job in 2 years. They have done what they needed to do. They want to grow, move on to some other place. That's not working. So I think organizations need a reset, and reset not only in terms of assessing potential or differentiating potential, but look at our entire value chain of how do you recognize and reward performance? How do you set your basic processes, your leadership development interventions, which are a burst of quick exposure to people. And then you think that they will go and perform, and they do, by the way, in the short term. So that's, to me, the biggest shift which is happening. Some organizations are getting it, and they are more proactive to get in front of it. I'm a big proponent of leadership with humanity. So those people who are leading with their core, who show up as who they are, and they're continuously nurturing and building their own personal character, they will be successful, you know, in the long term. Those who were really focused on go after a short-term success, I think are going to struggle. And when leaders struggle, businesses are going to struggle because they have a disproportionate impact on the business performance. So sooner organizations get it, better it is for them to get their strategy right.
Yeah, that is so powerful in terms of, I can just imagine how hard it is, you know, being an HR leader in this time, where not only are you dealing with the current immediate needs of people, virtual work, health and safety, you know, mental health, agility, responding to how the business needs to be agile, but also really rethinking process and rethinking core items like compensation and potential and learning. I imagine that it's a real challenging time and also a really exciting time, as you talked about it being a reset, a time of reset. So for listeners, if I'm a leader in an organization and I'm kind of hearing you talk about what's really important, what is advice you would have for a leader in terms of for them to develop this long-term mindset, for them to develop the capacity to lead from their core, from their values, from character? And these are really tough times, and tough times generally build character if you're intentional about it.
So, you know, you, by the way, just called out a very important or a very kind of critical aspect of how do you really make that change in your personal situation as you deal, because we are all human beings as we are dealing with this situation, and which is, Hena, being intentional. I think one of the challenges in the leadership world are people are so eager to show up well in the short term. Is that you're not even listening with an intent to understand. You're listening with an intent to respond. So I see it all the time in our business meetings and conversations. You know, people are processing the next response. What am I going to say when somebody's saying that?
Yeah.
And I think it's a time for pause. And this is, there's no better situation than what this world is faced with, which is take a step back and take a pause. And listen with an intent to understand. Once you do that, and then you connect that with who you are, and then show up with your vulnerabilities, with your personal apprehensions, people take you as who you are. I mean, you asked me my own experience. One of my biggest learning of working in different countries, living in, you know, connecting with teams which were very diverse is, people don't connect with what you do. They connect with who you are. So if you are going to show up as whatever, you know, VP of this or SVP of this or EVP of that versus show up as the genuine, authentic human being you are, people tend to gravitate. They want to be with you. They want to listen to you. They want to connect with you. They want to stand next to you. But if you are leaning a lot on your capabilities, on your titles, on your roles, and you are not leveraging that enormous amount of strength, which your core, I think you are not able to find those connections. I mean, one of my own learnings in a hard way was when I moved here to Europe from Asia. I'd never lived or worked in Europe. Most of my career was in India and then some part in Asia. And I started doing more of what I did in Asia. So I went into a regional role. I had very mature senior HR leaders from different countries of Novartis in Europe reporting into me. And I was trying to wow them with how much I know about my function. I can tell you, sitting in a meeting room in Nyon, Switzerland, I lost this team in 15 minutes. I got up in front of them. I introduced myself and I started sharing with them how good I was and why I was the right person to lead that team and how much I know about strategic HR and how I'm going to reshape the agenda. I lost these people. They were looking, I mean, Switzerland's beautiful. So people are looking outside the windows, looking at the mountains. And that was my biggest realization that I can't get my way to the point that I reached kind of a moment in my own journey where I approached Simon Nash, you know, the guy who brought me from Asia into Europe. And I said, can you send me back? Because I don't think I can fit in here. They don't talk to me. They don't listen to me. I don't think I'm accepted.
Wow.
And I went to a low. And then, you know, when you start realizing that it's not about how good you are, it's about, are you there for them? And in some ways, can you bring value to them? And can you learn from them? So once you build that connection, and I eventually moved out of that team after 4 years in that role, and I think that's probably one of the best team I've worked with. That was my biggest learning, that you don't need to work hard to fit in. You got to be who you are. Show up like that. And it needs nurturing. I think your other part of the question is, what do leaders do differently? I think your core, you got to nurture. You got to remind yourself from time to time not to get into that little slot where your need to look good all the time is so high that you just overshadow who you are and doesn't show up.
That's such a powerful story. Thank you for sharing that with such a great vulnerability, because you're right. As leaders, there are often times when our confidence is shot, and whether it's something that we did or something that happened in the business where our confidence goes down, and these times of disruption can actually shake somebody's confidence. Because as leaders, to your point, we're taught the job of a leader is to know what to do. And these times confound many of us, right, as leaders. And so coming back to who am I and what is my role? And it's not necessarily about knowing exactly what to do or projecting that, but it's actually about serving the people that are around us and learning from them. I think that was so beautifully said. So in my book, Wired for Disruption, one of the things that I talk about is trust, specifically trust agility and the ability to build trust quickly on teams. Yeah. And it strikes me that during these times, in particular, trust is so important because teams are coming together. And we've heard a lot of pandemic teams sort of coming together, being pushed together to deal with issues. And more organizations that are leading edge are actually talking about teams that come together in sort of a gig-like fashion as organizations start to become a lot more agile to and responsive, you know, to new emerging business solutions and opportunities. What have you learned that those that are listening to this podcast can know about building trust quickly on teams?
Great question, Hannah. So I'll share my own hypothesis, but I'm happy to, you know, look at it in a different way. This is what I feel how trust is built. So I think first, trust is not about others. Trust is about you. Many times we expect, you know, when people move into different roles, you did, I know, and I did, you know, moving to different geography, different place, into a completely unknown environment. And then you got to build that trust. I think trust is about you becoming trustworthy. Then others need to trust you because you're leader of that team. And I also believe you are your biggest brand of trust. So when you walk around, the way you connect with others, the way you speak, the way you come across is what is telling in that moment to people who are looking at you, whether you are trustworthy or not. That's the reality. I mean, whether it's a long conversation or whether it's an informal connect over a coffee in the corridor, people are observing you, especially in the case of leaders. People are observing you, looking at you. In global organizations, you have teams which are across or team members which are spread across the globe. If you're working hard to build trust, it doesn't happen. You got to show up every day as a trustworthy leader is the only way you can get trust of people, especially in cross-geography, diverse, multicultural teams. So that's where I go back to this whole concept of leading with humanity, showing up as who you are with your vulnerabilities, with your strengths, with your beliefs, with what values you carry with you. People connect with those and they start trusting that part of you.
That's such an important point that you're making. And so in organizations, we get people when they are fully adults, right? And so they come with all their insecurities. They come with the need to look good. They come with their blind spots. They're, after all, human, right? We're all human, as you said. So what are you doing, all these things we've talked about, being able to be trustworthy, being able to be human, having character? How do we do that at scale? You're responsible for doing that for 70,000 plus people, your team and you, and people come in as they are. What is the journey that enables them to do the things that you've talked about? What can others learn from you?
I am responsible for 70,000 people. So my entire leadership programs, curriculum, I had a very passionate conversation with my CEO and my executive team. And we are convinced that we got to focus our resources on building mindsets and attitudes as much as we need to focus on building skills and capabilities. So we are revamping, I'm in discussions with our partners to revamp our entire leadership development investments to reflect the attitudes and the mindsets which will make them leaders in a more sustained, more successful way. Yeah. But I think the change needs to be bigger. I do believe our curriculum in our MBA schools, business schools need to change and needs to evolve.
Yeah. I mean, what you're really talking about is an ecosystem shift that needs to happen. And I was just this week as participating in the World Economic Forum Sustainable Development Summit that happened this week. And a lot of the conversation was around how do you create leaders who are going to create a sustainable future for organizations. I know one of the things that I always ask transformational leaders, I think you are somebody who's very purpose-fueled. What were some pivotal experiences for you growing up that have helped really shape that sense of purpose that you talk about in terms of making workplaces more human?
So, you know, I think your own life journey, of course, has a big influence or impact in terms of shaping your thinking. I go back to my own childhood. You know, I lost my dad. I was 10 years old. And my mother brought us up, and we were in a small town, northern part of India. She made a big decision to move to a bigger city so that me and my brother, who's 2 years older, could get better education. And I thought that was powerful, because for someone to leave the comfort of the space where she was living for a long time and move to a completely unknown place just because she wanted we could get a better education, that had a big influence on my mind that, you know, you've got to be prepared to make big choices if you really want to move ahead in life. So I think that sense of accountability, sense of ownership of what you do and influence and impact you have on others. So my decisions are not mine anymore. My decisions are going to impact people around you, whether it's your family, people part of your team, people in the organization as you keep growing. So you become more responsible in terms of your choices. In the end, I feel showing up as who you are and nurturing your own personal value system and purpose, how to keep reminding yourself that what is important to you and what you will not compromise and what will not change helps you to stay anchored.
Yeah, beautiful. Staying anchored in disruptive times. Super important. Thank you so much for our conversation today, Atul. And I look forward to continue to learn from you and to the work that you're going to be doing to make our workplaces more human.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening. This is your host, Hannah Anam. Please rate, comment, and share our podcast with those you care about. Be the leader who helps others grow and thrive in times of disruption. You can visit our website at www.transformleaders.tv. There, you'll find other great tools to grow your leadership and be a force for good in these times. Until the next time, my friends.